Okay, so we're on Daf Mem Gimel tonight. So I'll begin on Mem Gimel 43a, around six lines from the top. Okay, so the Gemara says, "By Minei Rabbi Avina Mei Rav Sheshet." So Ravina posed the following questions to Rav Sheshet: "Bat Hani Zonet Min Ha'achin Masya Delami." So we spoke in the Mishnah about Masya Del, that which a daughter produces. So that's one of the sechuyos that a father has. You know, Benu Rebbe Avia. It's like, well, Kol Shevach Nu Rim LaAvia, that she's entitled to that which he produces. So Ravina says, let's say the father passes away and he leaves the estate. Obviously, the estate passes now. It's the brothers. Now, but she's being supported from the estate. Now, her being supported from the estate is one of the Tanai Ketubah. And Rashi points it out on the fourth wide line in Rashi that the Ketubah, their Ketubah is a little different than what we have. But their Ketubah would have a clause that said, "Benan Nukban Diyavun Lichi Minoi," that any female daughters that we have as a result of our union, that this is what the husband is writing to the wife, they'll be supported from my house till they're married off. So there's an obligation by the terms of the ksuba for the decedent, you know, to pay to support the daughter until she gets married. So let's say he dies, and now she's being supported from the assets of the estate. Now, in return for that, the father would normally get her masi adah. He would. So the Gemara asks, "So by minei Rabbi Avina Mei Rav Sheshet, bari nizot min ha'achin masi adah lemi? Who gets the masi adah now? Do I say v'makom av kaimi? Do I say that the brothers, they're sliding into the role of the father? They're not the father, but they're just like the father supported her. They're supporting her. Mahata masi adah av hakanami masi adah l'achin. Just like with the father." All the income would go to the father, so too here the same thing. Odilma lo dami la'av, or perhaps it's not exactly comparable in the same fashion. Why? Hata midide mitzana, over with the father, he's producing from what he earns. In other words, that's a direct, you know, quid pro quo. Hakala mididhu mitzana. Here, when they're giving her a piece of the estate, that's something that there's a shibud. In other words, it's an existing contractual obligation for them to do that. So it's not exactly, in other words, the father left an estate and part of the, you know, obligations of the estate are to support her. So it's not exactly, you know, the same thing. So that's the question. That's the question. So again, so this question was Rabbi Avina posed to Rav Sheshet. So Amarle, Rav Sheshet says to Ravina, Tani Tua. We learn the answer to this in a mission later on our Masechta, and this is on Daft Sadihei. It says, Almana Nizoni Minechse Yitomim, that a widow is supported from the nechasim of the Yitomim, in other words, from her late husband's estate. And that's also one of the clauses in the Ketubah. And Rashi brings this down as well. It says, if you look in the second and third narrow lines in Rashi, he says, "Dahainami tnai Ketubah hu b'pirkin, atayat v'beitim insami nechasai kli yamei begar armalutech." That he says in the Ketubah that you'll be supported from my estate as long as you're a widow. You get remarried, that's something different. But you're supported from my estate. So we have sort of two people, the daughter and the widow, who are kind of wards of the estate. But we see with the widow that the Mishnah says, "Amanani zonik nechse yitomim masi adah shelahem," and her masi adayim, that which she produces, goes to the brothers. So he says. So we think that lechora this should be zelbazak, the same idea. So the Gemara says, "Mi dami? How are those?" So that's what Rav Sheshet wants to say. Let's keep this in mind because that klal of Rav Sheshet, we have to keep in mind for the rest of the daf. Rav Sheshet holds that indeed, her masi adayim of the daughter goes to the brothers. That's what Rav Sheshet holds. So the Gemara says, "Midami, how are those two cases comparable?" Amanato lo nichle baharvacha, that when he, the decedent, is making these obligations and he's divvying up what the assets, you know, will go to whom and things like that, he doesn't want his almana, in other words, as between the almana and his sons, he doesn't want the almana to, you know, get like a kind of a free ride. In other words, I don't want the almana to get money at the expense of the sons, so enough nami that she'll be supported, but then I expect her masi adayim to go to the sons. But bito nichale baharvacha, but with the daughter, the decedent would want the daughter to have more, and I saw in the art school they said, because he wants her to be more, you know, eligible for suitors. In other words, if she's got more money, then they all like her and things like that. So that's what the Gemara wants to sort of slug it up and say maybe they're not comparable, and maybe the daughter gets the masa yadayim. So let me just do a few more lines and I'll pause, okay? So the main road, the bito adifa leimel manato. So according to that mahalach, lechora, it looks like the daughter is in a more favored status than the widow. In other words, that he, the decedent, favors the daughter over the widow. That's the idea. So he says, "Ba'amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Abba said, named Rabbi Yosi, asu amana etzel abad kibad etzel achin benachasim uatin." That the relationship between the almana and the daughter is the same as the daughter with the brothers when there's very little money in the estate. How so? Let's say the decedent does not leave a lot of money, leaves only a little bit of money, and the estate is not large enough to even support all the kids. So let's say there's daughters and sons, but there's not enough money to feed them all for a year. So there we say that we're going to favor the daughter over the brothers. In other words, that the boys will go, they'll beg, and she'll be supported, the girls will be supported. That's the way we take it. He says, "Af almana etzel habat." So too, the halacha is, according to Rabbi Yossi, he says, "Almana etzel habat." That the almana with the daughter, almana nizoni habat tishal abtachin. If let's say he leaves a widow, he leaves a daughter, and there's not enough money to support both of them, so that we're going to favor the widow. So earlier we said the widow vis-a-vis the daughter, we're going to favor the daughter. Now we're saying we're favoring the widow. So that seems like a stira. So the Gemara says, "Lini ziluta." In terms of degradation, a person would not want his almana to be degraded. It's a degradation to go around beg money. So that he definitely does not want. But if you're talking about, you know, surplus, you know, extra money, you know, everybody's immediate needs are taken care of. But in terms of harvacha, then with the surplus, I want my daughter to have that ma'aseya daim. Okay, let's just pause for a second, think what we did, and we'll go on, okay? So the issue that we're discussing is if a person dies, again, during a man's lifetime, so when she's a katana or a nara, a father is entitled to ma'aseya deha. That which she produces, if I have a fantastic daughter, she's a diamond cutter, so whatever she earns, I'm entitled to her ma'aseya deha, or ma'aseya deha. And the ma'aseya deha is instead of the, you know, that he's, you know, supports her. We'll talk about, you know, is there a limit? Is there a surplus with that? But that's the basic idea. But let's say he dies and now she's being supported from the estate pursuant to the terms of the ksuba. So who, if anyone, gets her ma'aseya deha? Does she keep it or does it go to the brothers? So so Rav Sheshet said that lechora it's the same as the almana. Rav Sheshet says that just like the almana is supported and the ma'aseya deha of the almana goes to the estate, so too the daughter is supported and it goes to the estate. That's what Rav Sheshet says. But then the Gemara says no, it's not exactly the same thing. Like we think that when it comes to the daughter, the father would want her to have all this extra money, so that like potential suitors would like her. And with the wife, he's not looking for that. And so it'd be a little bit different. And then we had a question, but we were able to resolve it. Okay, who's your question comes from anything so far? What's up? We're talking about a girl who's below 12 and a half. Say again what? Yeah, you're right. According to Rashi says, I think we'll do a bridge. Right, it could even be older. If she's getting the support from the estate, So lechora, I have to go over this, but if you have a daughter and the father is still continuing to support her, I have to see. But it sounds like that she would give the ma'aseya deha to the father, but I have to look into it. I got to look into it. It sounds like from the language of the ksuba, you're right. It sounds like that it's, if it's a quid pro quo, that's what it sounds like. So I have to look into that. Okay. Any other questions, comments, thoughts? Okay, let's keep moving further in the Gemara. Everybody with me? Okay. So now, so Rav Sheshet said that her ma'aseya deha go to the estate, the daughter. And then the Gemara has some arguments to be the other way around, that she should be able to keep the ma'aseya deha. So Mativ Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef is asking a kasha against Rav Sheshet from the following brisa. I said from our Mishnah. From the Mishnah we did yesterday. The Mishnah said, that when it comes to her masi yada, that which she produces, and her mitzia, if she found something, means during the father's lifetime, she earned money. During the father's lifetime, she found a mitzia. Alpha pishlo gavta, even though she didn't collect it, and we'll talk about the earnings this way, and we'll see about the other term. He says, meit ha'av, harein shel achin. In other words, so let's say she earned $1,000 before the father died, then the father died, and now the paycheck comes in the mail. So now it goes to the brothers, according to the Mishnah. So the Mishnah, so the Gemara says, tama debachayi ha'av. So the implication of the Mishnah is the reason the brothers get it is because this was something that was earned during the father's lifetime. So he was zoken it. Halachar mitarav. But the implication of the Mishnah is that if she would earn it after the father's dead, it's la'atzma. That is her money. So that's not looking good for Rav Sheshet. This is my la benizoni. Is it not that the Mishnah is talking about a girl who's being supported by the estate, and notwithstanding that, we would say that afterwards she would keep it. So the Gemara says, lo b'she'en anizoni. I could say no. The Mishnah is talking about a girl that's not being supported by the estate. So if she's not being supported by the estate, my lamemra. So what, like, what's even to talk about? Even according to the opinion that says a master could say to his eved kinani, I'm not going to support you, but you still have to work for me. That's only true by an eved kinani, where it doesn't say imach. It says kitov lo imach by an eved ivri. But the Eved Ivri, it says, Ki tov lo imach, it's good with you. He says, lo, that would not be the case. So we think that if an Eved Ivri, the father is absolutely obligated to support, so during his lifetime, so certainly the daughter is obligated to support. So Koshkein Bito. So what do you mean that she's Ein and Nizoni? So I'm a Rav Ula. So we think the mission only, in other words, when we talk about the father collecting, you know, from things that she earned during his lifetime, the presumption is the father's supporting her. That's the case. So if we're talking about supporting her, and I have a diuk from the Mishnah, so it would mean that even though she's supported after the father dies, she keeps it. In other words, the implication of the Mishnah is we're talking about a girl is being supported by her father, and then she earns money, and then the check comes after the father's dead. Then it goes to the brothers. But in Achinami, if she would earn money after the death of the father, even though she's being supported, she would keep it. That's the flow of the Mishnah. So wait one second. So that being the case, this Mishnah poses a kasha on Rav Sheshet. So Amar Rav Bar Ula, lo nistrucha el hadafa. So Rav Bar Ula says no. It could be that we're talking about a girl that is not being supported. One second, is not being supported. And she's not being supported from the estate. But the deed from the Mishnah is laha adafa, that she's earning much more. She's earning a ton of money. In other words, like she's this diamond cutter. So she's ainin izonit. So the question is like this. Let's say you have a young girl. So normally it's the father gives the mizonos. Let's say the mizonos are $100 a week. And she earns up to $100 a week. So if he's not giving her mizonot, then she gets to keep the $100 a week. But what if she's earning $1,000 a week and her mizonos are only $100? So is the father entitled to the extra amount? So the Gemara learns, yeah. So he says, lo nisrael hadafa. So in other words, so the Mishnah then would be teaching me, so the Mishnah could be talking about a girl that's not being supported. And it's saying, though, that her masei yadayim, you know, go to the father, but it means the surplus goes to the father. And then, so then after the father's death, it would be teaching that the surplus, she gets to keep the surplus. But in Achinami, that $100, the implication of the Mishnah would then be that she has to give it to the brothers. So in other words, the Gemara is deflecting Rav Sheshet's proof. Not Rav Sheshet, the Gemara is deflecting Rav Yosef's proof. So Amarava, Yavarava Krav Yosef, Lo Yada the Ika Hadafa, mean some great man like Rav Yosef doesn't know about the concept of surplus. Become otiv to Yufta, and he's asking a question, and he certainly knows that. Ella Amarava, and I'll pause after this whole little piece, and we'll summarize, okay? So Ella Marava, Rav Yosef Manitin Gufa Kashalei. Rav Yosef was bothered by the Mishnah itself. The Katani Masei Yadayim Mitziyata Af Pishlo Gavta. The Mishnah says, her Masei Yadayim and her Mitziyah, even though she didn't collect it. So that goes to the father. So mitziyatami mangavi, where would she collect the mitziyah from? Mitziyah is something she finds in the street. Elav hachi kamar. Is it not that what the Mishnah means is as follows? Ma'aseyadeh kemitziyata. That the Mishnah is saying that a girl's ma'aseyadayim, that which she earns, has the same din as her mitziyah. Ma'amitziyata b'chayav la'av. Just like if she finds mitziyah during the lifetime of the father, it goes to the father. After the father dies, it belongs to herself. So too, this is the way Rabbi Yosef understands the Mishnah, that her ma'aseh yadayim as well, even if she's being supported, during the lifetime of the father, it goes to the father. So after the death of the father, it goes to her. So let's go slowly with this. So the idea is, Rav Yosef, again, we have the machloket between Rav Sheshet and the Gemara, or the other Shitot in the Gemara, is if the girl is being supported by the father's estate, if the girl is being supported by the father's estate, do the Ma'aseh Yadayim go to the brothers? Do they go to the brothers or not? So Sheshet said they do. So Rav Yosef's asking from the Mishnah, Rav Yosef wants to say from the Mishnah, that the Mishnah says, but the Mishnah says Ma'aseh Yadayim and Mitziyata. Why does the Mishnah mention Mitziyah? And it talks about Gavit. The Mishnah is setting up an equivalence between Ma'aseh Yadayim and Mitziyah. Mitziyah, if he finds it during the father's lifetime, the father absolutely gets it. So too, the Ma'aseh Yadayim, he gets it. Even if he's supporting her. Certainly if he supports it, gets it. But after the death of the father, then her Mitziyah belongs to herself. So too, the Ma'aseh Yadayim belong to her, even if she's being supported by the estate. That's the way Rabbi Yosef understands the Mishnah. So that's the kasha that Rabbi Yosef's asking. That was the earlier part. So the Gemara had an alternative explanation of our Mishnah to say that maybe the Mishnah is talking about a situation where she's not being supported, and she's not being supported, but maybe then she only gets to keep the amount of money that she earns that's equal to her basic, food requirements. But the surplus, maybe that's what the Mishnah means. So the Mishnah would mean that if she's not being supported, then she gets to keep that amount. That if she's not being, wait a second, let me go back. What was that? One second. Yeah. Right. So we said, so again, if the Mishnah is talking about where she's not being supported, then she gets to keep it. So Mela, then if she's being supported, then she can't keep it. So if the Ainin is Onid, so why do we need the ruling from the Tana at all? If she's the Ainin is Onid, he says, yeah. Right. In other words, the whole purpose of the Mishnah is to teach me this inference after the father's dead. So if it's ain't in his own, why is he saying it? So he says it's lahadafa. The mission is really dealing with the daughter not being supported by the state of the brothers, but this is with respect to her surplus income, the earnings above what she needs to feed herself. That's what the mission is teaching me. So he's saying like this. Yeah, that the brothers are not entitled to the surplus. That's it. In other words, right. In other words, the Mishnah is teaching me that the brothers are not entitled to the surplus, even though the father would have been entitled to the surplus under those circumstances, but the brothers are not entitled to the surplus. Okay. All right. Any other questions, comments, or thoughts? Okay. Let's go further in the Gemara. All right. So right now, the Malach in the Gemara seems to be that if the brothers are supporting her, that they don't get, that they don't receive the her Ma'aseh Yadayim. Now, let's see back in the Gemara. So Shmamina. So the Gemara says, Itmar Nami, Am Rav Yudah Marav. It was stated as well that Rav Yudah and the Marav, Barani Zonim Na'achin, if a daughter is being supported by the brothers, Ma'aseh Adela Asma. She gets to keep the Ma'aseh Yadayim. So far, so good. Am Rav Kana Ma'itama. So Rav Kana says, what's the reason she gets to keep her Ma'aseh Yadayim, and then why are the brothers not zocheh in it? Dechtiv minachaltem otam v'neichem acharichem. The pasuk says in Parshas Behar that with respect to abadim kinanim, you'll give them over as Yerusha to your sons. In other words, you have an Eved Kenani that's part of the estate. Otam of Nechem, but Otechem of Nechem. That you're, the slaves you give over, but the daughter is not included as part of the estate. Teaches that the zechuyos that a father has during his lifetime, he's not giving those zechuyos over to his sons. So Rabbah asks Akash against this. But why can't I say the pasuk is teaching me? Now again, Rav Kana just had a pasuk, is what he was darshening out. So Maktiva Rabbah, the Ema, the Pitui about a Knas of the Kabbalah, the bear. Why can't I say when the pasuk says that he's not going to be morish to his sons certain rights, why don't I say it's the right to Knas? It's the right to Kabbalah. It's the right, you know, it's the right to Mefateh. He says, V'chintana Rav Chanina, and that's Rav Chanina learned in his base medrash, Mefurash, it sounds like it's a Braisa, the Pitui about a Knas of Kabbalah, the bear. That is talking about those things he can't go over to the daughter. So the Gemara says, Chabalod, Sarah Degufaninu. Why would I even think, why would I even entertain the possibility that, in other words, he wants to say that even when it comes to Chabalod, even the father doesn't have the Zuchus Chabalod. He said, Sarah Degufa, that's her own personal pain. It's true that by the onus, he did get Sa'ar. But generally, the father is not entitled to any tsar, and the daughter gets as a result of an injury. So Amar Yossi Bar Chanina, on the top line on Amud Beis, Shiptzah B'Faneh. It talks about this case, let's say somebody hit her in the face and diminished from her value, you know, for selling her as an Amma Ivriya, so then that would be something the father would be entitled to. So again, so we have statements saying that the Maase Yadayim, she gets to keep it. And then we had an ostensible proof in the Pasuk. The rabbi asked a question against that, and we don't resolve that question. So Amar of Zeru, Amar of Man Amarav, Amila Amar Rebbe Zeru Amar Man Amarav, Bahani Zonim Na'achin, Maseh Adel Atzma. So here also, either Rav Zeru or Rebbe Zeru says that which the daughter produces goes to herself. So he quotes the same pasuk, Magid Shenadam Morish Zechut Bito Livno. Amarli Avimi Bar Papi Shakud Amara. So Avimi Bar Papi said Shakud, the diligent one, said this. Shakud Manu, who's the diligent one? Shmuel. So the Gemara says HaRav Amara, but Rav is the one who said it. So Ema Af Shakud Amara. It was Rav said it, and also Shmuel said it. So the Gemara is coming out that both Rav and Shmuel both say that she keeps the Maaseh Yadayim if the father dies. So Amar Mar Bar Amemel Ravashi Hachi Amri Neherdoi. So Mar Bar Amemel said to Ravashi, this is what the Neherdeans say. The Laka follows Rav Sheshet, that the brothers get the Maaseh Yadayim. Rav Ashi Amar Hilchata Kivati D'Rav. Rav Ashi says the Laka follows Rav, that she gets to keep the Maaseh Yadayim. Hilchata Kivati D'Rav. The Gemara concludes the Laka indeed follows Rav. Okay, so basically we went through a whole Shaka Batari with this. So the question was, I'm just repeating myself, if a girl during her father's lifetime, her Maaseh Yadayim goes to the father, but if the father dies, leaves an estate, she's being supported by the estate. So where does the Maaseh Yadayim go? So at the end of the day, the Gemara says she gets to keep, or the halacha follows machloket, but at the end of the day, she gets to keep the Maaseh Yadayim. Okay, now I want to say a few other things that I'll take to open up the floor. Now, this is sort of interesting Rashi, I thought, on the second wide line. He talks about the difference between Rav Zeira and Rebbe Zeira. If you saw in the Gemara, on line one, it said, I'm a Rav Zeira, and then on line two, I'm a Rebbe Zeira. So it's either Rav Zeira says the name of Ramat and the name of Rav, or Rebbe Zeira says the name of Ramat and Amar Rav. What's the difference between Rav Zeira and Rebbe Zeira? Let's see Rashi. I'm Rav Zeira, but I'm Amar Rebbe Zeira. So Rashi says, who Rebbe Zeira? Who Rav Zeira? It's the same person. El B'Bavel, Mikami de Salat La'arid Yisrael, Mikami de Rabbi Yochanan, that Rav Zeira started off in Babel. Before he went to study with Rabbi Yochanan, he says, Vein Smicha B'Bavel. So when you're in Babel, they don't give people Smicha, the Smicha going back to the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. He says, V'Havu Karale Rav Zeira. So one opinion was when he was in Babel, he was Rav Zeira. When he came to Eretz Yisrael, he got Smicha, he was Rebbe Zeira. So the So one version is he made the statement before he received Smicha. And again, the Smicha is not our Smicha, it means the Smicha going back to the Moshe Rabbeinu. And he says, and then some say after he got it, he made the statement. And then if you look at Rashi, the third narrow line, Shmuel, Habu Karle Shakud. He was called the diligent one. Al shum de hilchatak vate b'dinei. The halacha always follows Shmuel b'dinei when it comes to dinim mamonot. The halacha is like Shmuel. So here the Gemara presumably takes it as a dinim mamonos. In other words, who gets which money? So the halacha usually follows Shmuel. So here too, he says v'shoked al dvarav la'omram kilchata. He's very diligent to go over his words to say them aliba de hilchata. All right. Now, who's got questions, comments, thoughts, anything we did so far? All right. Any other questions, comments, thoughts? All right. Everybody good? All right. Everybody good? All right. So I'm going to go on. Okay? All right. Now, the next mission. Okay. Manitin hama'aris habito v'girsha. Now, let's say a man, he's ma'aris. He accepts erusin, the kesef erusin on behalf of his daughter, and then the husband divorces the daughter. He says, yirsav and armala. Then, now, again, remember the daughter is staying in the father's house till the nisuin. This daughter never went through nisuin. So the Gemara is going to say nisuin is what takes her out of the rishus of the father, both literally, legally, and physically. So he only did erusin with her, and then she got divorced. Then he did erusin again with her, but into armel, and then she was widowed. Tubata shalo. So the Tana of the Mishnah says he, the father, is entitled to the kesef, both ksubas. In other words, the money from both ksubas goes to the father. Well, they did the erusin. That's like a type of being married. Well, so here, this sugya assumes that the right to the ksuba, you know, attaches at erusin, but they're entering to a shtar at a certain point in time, and they're signing the shtar, or he, the husband, is signing the shtar, or no, the edom is signing the shtar, but he's doing the kinyan, you know, before the nisuin. That's what it assumes. Now, he see of a girsha, let's say the father married her off, so he went further. He married her off, and then she got divorced. He see of an etarmala, then he married her off, and she was widowed. Tubata shalom. Then, her ksuba belongs to her. In other words, once she's married, that terminates the father's rights in her, and mamela, now the ksuba is hers. So you would have to say that the second time that he's marrying her off. Yeah. We'll come to it.
He's married. Maybe he can, but the money's not hard.
So he has it. If you look in footnote 9, he asked that question. So the Mishnah should have said Nisei. The Mishnah the second time should say Nisei. And Akinami, the father does not have a right to marry her off the second time. But she got married. So either, if she's below age, then it could be that her mother and brothers marry her off on a Drabbanan level, but she was married. Nisei. Okay? Let's see back in the Gemara. So again, Subhatashalav, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Harishona Shalav. So Rabbi Yehuda says, if it's Hisiya V'Girsha, so again, the Chachamim are looking when she's collecting the money. So if she's collecting the money after the Nisuin, so she's already an independent woman. That's the way the Chachamim are looking at this mindset. Rabbi Yehuda's looking, when did the obligation attach? So the obligation attached before the Nisuin, because that's when the Ksuba is done. Rabbi Yehuda Meir HaRishon HaShalav. Rabbi Yehuda says, the Ksuba from the first marriage belongs to the father. So Amru Lo, so Rabbi Yehuda is looking at the time that the ksuba was written, and the Chachamim are looking about the time when you're collecting it. All right, okay. So again, just to summarize this Mishnah, so the Mishnah teaches me if it's before nisuin, so the father still has rishus over her, so all the money she's getting from the ksuba goes to the father if she never went through nisuin. In the second case of the Mishnah, where she went through nisuin, so anything she collects after the Nisuin is her money because she's an independent, she's leaving the father's rishus. And then Yosef asked me, how could the father remarry her if she went through one nisuin and then got divorced? So in Echinami, he can't. So you have to say nisei, that she was married. There's a way to get married. In other words, either the mother, the brothers. Well, if she's below age, then she can. But there's the chachamim were talking that she could. Okay, all right. Who's the question?
How come in the resha of the Mishnah it says ketubata shelo? It's as if it's talking about one ketubah when it's speaking about two.
So, I should say ketubotot shelo. Okay, so Fern wants to know why ketubah is lashon yachid. 1 second. You could say that it just means like ketubah. Like he says in the article that her ketubah from both marriages belongs to the father. He says, yeah. So it certainly means both. But the only thing I could say is like you know the ketubah, like the like you know the right to ketubah is his. That's all I could say. I know otherwise I don't know. Okay, let's see further the Gemara. Now the Gemara is bothered in the first case, in the second case, the Mishnah. It says, he see of a girsha, he see of an armala. Now we're going to have two marriages, and we spoke about, Rabbi Yehuda says that, again, so I need two, because to illustrate Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds that the Rishona belongs to the father. That's what the Rabbi Yehuda holds, that the first one, the document was executed when she was still in the of the father, so it's his. So I need to have two marriages, but the second one, he agrees, is hers. According to both Stadim, agree with that. So I need two marriages, but the Tana has one hisi of a girsha, the other hisi of an etarmala. One, he marries her off and she's divorced. The other, he marries her off and she's widowed. So the Gemara says, Tama the hisi of a girsha, hisi of an etarmala, that the reason that she can marry twice is because the first marriage was divorced, and the second with ending with a widow. In other words, the warranty is like widow is a whole calamity when the guy dies. But if Luyatsur, she would be widowed twice, Tulo Chazilin Suve, she wouldn't be Ru'i to be married again. So it means like this. The Gemara takes it that if a woman is married a number of times, and the husbands keep dying, the woman's a katlanit. We've had this before. We had it in Yibamo. She's a katlanit, right? Right. So it's machloka between Rebbe and his father, Shimon Gamliel. Rebbe holds twice she's a katlanit. So here, the Tana wants to teach me that he see a girsha, he see even at the armala, he married her off, she got divorced, he married her off in the armala, because if Luyatsur wouldn't be that way, then she'd be like prohibited to ever get married again. So he doesn't want to like open up with a bad thing, but he's trying to say, let's look at Rashi on this. Okay, all right, let's see the Rashis. We'll see in a minute. Okay, it says Tulo Chazilin Suve, the first Rashi, to have a chazak liot bala meitim. There's a presumption that her husbands are going to die now. The dak tana of milte lolinko bederach parana. The Tana doesn't want to teach you like a bad siman. He doesn't want to give you a case where both husbands die. He doesn't want to give that case. That's a horrible thing. He doesn't want to give that case. But agav orcha, and along the way, he teaches me to buy like murina and mishpat haketuba machlok rabbi rabbanan nakalishna din the mistam lan kerebi amar sechi bamo nisa the rishon made. So Agav Orcha, the Tana is alluding to the fact that Halacha follows Rebbe, or according to this Tana, and not his father. All right, is everybody right or not? Everybody good? Okay, let's see further in the Gemara. Now, all right, so Rebbe Yehuda Omer HaRishona Shalav. So the Tana Rebbe Yehuda says, so again, focusing on the second case in the Mishnah. Second case in the Mishnah, the father marries her off, she gets divorced. The father, or someone marries her off, and then she's widowed. So in both cases, according to the Tanakhama, Ketubah Tashalah, she gets to keep the ketubah, because where the key element is when she's collecting it. When she collects it, it's after Nisuin. So she's an independent person. But Rabbi Yehuda says, HaRishon Shalav, Rabbi Yehuda says, we're going to go when the ketubah was executed. So it was executed before the Nisuin. So that's the key time. So the first ksuba is father's. So Amrulo, So let's see back in the Gemara. So Rabbi Yehuda Mary Shon Shalav, my time is Rabbi Yehuda. What's the reason for the Tana Rabbi Yehuda? So Rab of Rabbi Yosef to Amri Tarvayu, Rab and Rabbi Yosef both say, and we saw in yesterday's Gemara how they were, you know, contemporaries, and they were, you know, the question was who to be the Rosh Hashiva. And remember, after Rabbi died, Rabbi Yosef had that Pirak, he said. So Rab Rabbi Yosef to Amri Tarvayu, Holam Shat Erusin Zachaba Hina Av. So he wants to say the father is Zocha with it, Mishasa Erusin. This Gemara is assuming that there's a right to the Ksuba. You could say, even as a matter of law, from the time of the Erusin. So the Gemara is going to reject this, but the Gemara thinks initially that Rabbi Yehuda holds that the father has a zechus in it because it accrues to her from the moment of Erusin. The so Mativ Rava, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, so he asks a kasha from the following brisa, that Rava does. Rabbi Yehuda says, Harishona Shalav, that again, the case where the father, she's married twice. So the first ksuba belongs to the father, Umoda Rabbi Yehuda, but Rabbi Yehuda agrees, the Ma'are Sabito Shiktana, that if he did the Erusin when she was a Ktana, Ubagra, and then she became older. In other words, first he did the Erusin with her, she was 11 and a half. And then she's sitting in the house till she's 13. He says, Ubagra, Vacharkach Nisein, and then she goes to Nisuin, She'ein Lav Yerushitba, that the father has no right to the ksuba. So we're trying to find out what's the reason for the Tana Rabbi Yehuda. We said that Rabbi Yehuda, according to this, that he holds that from the moment of the Erusin, she's entitled to Ksuba. But if that's the case, how come in this Braisa, at the time of the Erusin, she was Ktana, and then later on, you know, the marriage is terminated, not, so am I. Hakanami Lema, Hol Mishad Erusin Sachab Ha'av. Ela Yitmar Hachi Yitmar. So rather, the Gemara revises the statement of Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef. He says, if they made the statement, this is what they made the statement. That the ksuba was written up when she was still in his rishus. In other words, the document was written when she was in his rishus. So therefore, he's entitled to it. So in the case when she became a bogeret, the assumption is that it was executed when she was a bogeret. So the key element, the key time is. Right. So the key time that we're looking at is when was the document executed? If the document was executed when a time when the father's entitled to it, when she's anara or below, then according to the Tana Rabbi Yehuda, he's entitled to ksuba, even if the marriage falls apart much later. But if it's executed after she's a bogeret, then not. And the chamil hold, we look at the time when she's collecting the money. Okay? Everybody okay so far? Any questions? Okay, further. Now, the Gemara says, U'mikva me'emat gavya. Now, the Gemara is wondering, when it comes time to collect the ksuba, now, when you have a document which is written, so the big element, the big mile of a written document is you can collect from the chasim mishubadim, that even if the husband sold off property, I can collect it. Let's say the guy, you know, was loaded at the time of the Erusin, and then he sells off everything. So, From which point in time is the woman entitled, does she have a shibud on the property? So umigva me'emet gavya. So Amar Rav Huna says, manamatai min ha'erusin, v'tosefet min ha'nisuin. Now, there's an idea in halacha. Normally, if it's an oral indebtedness, you're not entitled to, you don't have any shibud on karka. But here, there's an idea in Mefarshim, and you're right, it's not such a simple sugya, but here, and there's an idea in Mefarshim that ma'asei bezdin, is like as if it's written. If it's something that the Beis Din requires, it's as if it's written. So the Gemara assumes that, and this Gemara, there's a question, when are you entitled to the ksuba money? But this Gemara is taking it from the time of Erusin that you're entitled to ksuba, this mahalach. But assuming that to be the case, from the time of Erusin, whether the document has been executed or not, she's automatically entitled to 200 zuz if she's a betula. So the Gemara says, so Amar of Kahuna, mana matayim mina erusin. So if it's a mana or matayim, depends on whether she's a betula or a grusha, that's from the time of the erusin. The tosefet mina nisun. But the tosefet is an additional amount that the husband adds on to the ksuba. That's from the time of the nisuin. Presumably, I assume that's when he executes the ksuba at that time or something like that, but that's at a later point in time. So, meaning, according to Rav Huna, the woman has a shibud on, let's say, Matayim Zuz from the time of the Erusin, and the Tosefet at a later point in time. So 200 zuz, she can claim, let's say, from Teved, if that's when the Erusin was. And then if the marriage took place in Sivan, she can claim the Tosefet. Rav Asi says, Akadzev, Akadzev, and Anisuin. Rav Asi says, everything is from the Nisuin, according to Rav Asi. Now, let's take a look at Rashi on the last narrow line. Akadzev, Akadzev, and Anisuin. Dehi Gupa, Machla, Lishibud, Akama. Rashi says that a woman, in Achinami, she had a Shibud from the time of the Erusin, but she's Mochelet, the Shibud. Then it's Rashi, Manaksub of Star, Bektuba, Kichom, Furishba, Ben, Ikar, Ben, Tosevet. Meaning, a later point in time, the husband says, dearest, I love you so much, I'm going to give you 500 zuz. There was 200 zuz, your ikar ksuba, another 300 zuz. He says, oh, I love you, I love you, I love you. And then she's mochel, her original shibud, and then she's looking to the second date, whatever that date is, when the ksuba is being executed. That's the way that Rav Asi...
As a lousy lawyer.
What? A lousy lawyer, then, according to his
permit. Yes, a lawyer.
Okay, we'll see. Now, so this question is asked both according to both Shitot. That's the way the Gemara is taking it, with both Shitot. So in Achinami, we did have a question about when the father's Zechuyos, begin and terminate, but it seems a little bit different in terms of the Shiva Nechasim seem to be operating with a different set of rules. Lechora, it seems to be operating with a different set of rules. Let's see further the Gemara. So the Gemara says, "Umiyam Rav Huna Hachi." Did Rav Huna really say? So focusing on Rav Huna says, "Manama time from the Erusin." That's by act of law, and later on, at the time of Ksuba, presumably the time that he's suing, is going to be Tosefet. The Umiyam Rav Huna Hachi. Did Rav Huna really say that? For Ha'itmar was stated, "Hotzilav Shteik Tubot." Let's say the woman, after the marriage falls apart, she produces two documents. She's got two Ksubas. Achat Shamatayim. The first Ksuba, presumably an earlier ksuba, it has matayim zuz, but not shel shlosh miyot, one with 300 zuz. But Amar Rav Huna says, matvul gabot matayim, if she wants to collect 200 zuz, govim mizman rishon, then she goes from the first date. Shlosh miyot, govim mizman sheni. 300 to the second one, meaning she has to elect her remedy. If she wants star aleph, then she gets the date in star aleph. If she wants star beis, she takes the date in star beis. But he doesn't say, he says, Vim Ita, but if Rav Huna really holds that you have a Shibud from the Erusin from one and then the other one later on, Vim Ita, Tigvi Matayim Mizman Rishon, she should be able to collect 200 zuz from the first time, Umeyam Mizman Sheni, and another 100 from the second time. In other words, Rav Huna, why does he split it when no document is written? And then when documents are written, he says he picked one or the other. In other words, Rav Huna initially, there was no document was written, but he says from the Erusin as a matter of law, you're entitled to 200, and then you have a Shibud from that time, and then later on when he enters the Ksuba and he says 300, so then you have a Shibud on the extra 100 later on. But I could split it. In other words, I could mix and match. But now with two Ksubas, Rav Huna says you can't mix and match. You pick one or the other. If you want the first man, you're limited to 200. You want the second Zman, because you want the 300, you're limited to the Zman that's in the second star. So since you want time Zman Rishon, Omeyam Zman Sheni. So the Gemara says, V'letameich, according to your rationale, so Tigbei Chamesh Meyot Kulam. So why can't she collect 500 altogether? Matayim Zman Rishon, Fatmam Zman Sheni, and then 300, why don't we aggregate everything? Ela Chamesh Meyot Mai Tamal Logavya, why can she not collect 500? He says, he didn't say I'm adding 300 on the 200. That in essence, what the husband was saying to the wife was, if you want to pick the earlier time, then you get 200 zuz. Then if you're doing the second time, then you get 300. So the top line of Delamal. So Hachinami, so here too, Hainu Tama and Lo Gavya, Lo Katav Law, in other words, why she can't collect the extra 100, in other words, 500 is not getting, but even the 300, she can't, 200 and 100, I can't split it. Hachinami, Hainu Tama, Lo Gavya, Lo Katav Law, Osifit Lach Me'a Matayim, he didn't write, I'm adding I'm adding 100 to the previous 200. Achuli achilta l'shibur kama. Right. She 100% correct. She's mochelet the original shibud. She's mochelet the original shibud. He says, let's take a look at the Rashi. He says, lo katav osifet la mea amatayim kamoi, el katav zman sheni l'chol ha-shlosh meyot, lo b'lashon mosif al ha-shtar rishon, shroin ha-achilta l'shibud ha-kama, bim bak l'gabot shtar ha-sheni tikva mizman sheni, aval gabi tosefet ha-mosif b'chol ketubot aman amatayim kotvin bo v'osifet la amai d'tikon rabana, hilkach lo achilta l'shibud ha-kama v'dekai koi. So, in other words, when he writes, in other words, in the first case, when he did 200 and then he adds another 100 on, in other words, it was oral initially, and then he writes 300 ketuba, he says, I'm adding on an extra 100. Is right. In other words, in addition to the 200, I'm adding on an extra 100. There, he's evincing an intent. You keep your original shibud, I'm adding on to it. But when he writes one star for 200, another star for 300, so he's saying, in essence, you want the first shibud, that's nice that, but keep the 200. You like the second zman, then you get the 300, but you got to take the second zman with it. Right, right. In other words, the properties that he had, yeah, he doesn't have anymore. That's the big idea. Okay. Any questions?
But in your recitation of the facts originally, he said, "I love you. I want to give you 500." You're saying that that's not the scenario. He said
I didn't say 500, 300, 500. The Gemara got it. He says,
I think you said 500. I was very happy.
Well, the Gemara definitely said 500. So anyway, you have the recording. You can figure out what it was. But before he didn't say he definitely did not say that. He definitely didn't say 500.
So the second ketubah or the second installment is a revocation of the first, is what you're saying.
Well,
according to that mala.
Well, it's an alternative offering. In other words, you could take star. It's like curtain A or curtain B. You could take the first star and get 200. Or the second star and get 300, but it comes with a later date. It's like
a codicil. He revokes the priors.
All right. Okay. Let's just do a little bit here, and that'll be it for tonight. Now, Now let me talk about. We had in the Gemara. We had about the woman who's if the Tana doesn't want to say that the two husbands both died, so he's a divorce and then died. So the Gemara infers that the town of our Mishnah is Rebbe, who asserts that a two-time occurrence is sufficient to establish a chazakah, and therefore a woman is considered katlanet after she's widowed just two times. And he says, see the Aladaf and Yivamos, Daf Chafav. The Gemara Yivamot on Samach Dalid says, Allah follows Rebbe, who says it is forbidden to marry a woman who is twice widowed. The Rush writes that if someone violated this halacha and married a katlanet, a bezdin compels him to divorce her, because Tamir Sakantam Yisura. Dangerous circumstances are treated more stringently than Isurim. The Rambam disagrees and rules that if one violates the Isur and married a Katlanit, he's not obligated to divorce her. The Kesem Mishnah explains the Rambam rules leniently because he's of the opinion that the Isur to marry a Katlanit is the only rabbinic injunction since it does not pose a tangible danger. He says the Rambam also rules it is permitted to perform Yibam with the Yavama, who is twice widowed, as he says the sages suspended the Isur marry a Katlanit for the sake of Mr. Yibam. Okay, wait a second. So we have the prohibition of marrying Katlanit. So the Rush holds that we'd make him divorce her because Kamir Sakatani Surah. Roman says he could stay married to her. Now, Tosfos refers to the Gemara in Yavamot on Samach Dalid, which cites two views on the Eastern American Katlanit. Abimi says the concern is Mayan Gorem. Her uterus is the cause of death, meaning we're concerned that she has a communicable disease transmitted through Tashmish. That's what Abimi says. Ravashi says the concern is Mazal Gorem. Her mazel, her fortune in life, is the cause. The Gemara, in other words, why do the husbands keep dying? So one holds Mayan Goreim, and one says Mazel's Goreim. The Gemara points out that according to Avimi, which is with the Mayan, is permitted to marry a woman whose previous two husbands died before Nisuin, before the marriage was consummated, or from unnatural causes, like they fell off a roof. In other words, so according to Avimi, if husband number one got into a car accident, that's got nothing to do with her, because Mayan Goreim, he says. Because there's no concern the woman's Mayan caused her death. Or, and now the Rambam rules in accordance with Rashi that Mazel Gorem. that like her bad mazel causes it. Therefore, even if a woman's husband's died from unnatural causes or prior to nisuin, she's a katlanit, and it's her inauspicious mazel caused her husband's death. Now, the chikri leiv considers a case of a nara betula who was violated after she was previously betrothed two times, who was twice widowed. So let's say I have a nara who's a betula. She's a virgin, but she was married twice. She could be married twice, and she was twice widowed. Both husbands died. He wonders whether the ma'anes is obligated to the mitzvah of lo tia le'isha. Now, the rapist, he's got to marry her. But now his mazel is he raped a katlanit. So he says here, no, it's not so pashut. We'll see in a minute. Then lo tia le'isha and must marry his victim even though she's a katlanit. Now, since the anusa is a katlanit who is generally forbidden from marriage, perhaps the mitzvah of lo tia le'isha does not apply. Now, the chikrei leiv rules that just as the sages did not forbid a yavam from marrying a katlanit. In other words, let's say the Rambam rules, let's say I have yibum with a woman who's a katlanit. The Rambam rules that I could do yibum with the katlanit. So the chikrei leiv says if I can do yibum with the katlanit, so to here, the ma'anes has the mitzvah lo tia le'isha. Moreover, he argues that even according to the opinion of the Rush, that a person who marries katlanit is compelled to divorce due to the danger involved, a ma'anis is compelled to marry the girl he violated, regardless of her undesirable or perilous condition. As the Mishnah Lamed Tet euphemistically says, ma'anis, shote ba'atzito, he must drink from the vessel he chose for himself. In other words, if he rapes a blind girl, or he rapes a lame girl, that's his wife. If he raped a katlanit, that's your lot in life. That's what he wants to say. Yeah, that's it.
But this...
Why do we allow for yibum? So he says the sages suspended the Easter Mary Katlana for the sake of the Mitzvah Yibum. In other words, that would be the alternative. But according to the Rambam, when Rambam's looking at it, that obviously this in the ideal world, there's a bigger mitzvah of doing yibum than doing chalitza. Well, but the thing is, he says that anyway.
This has been taken care of the last 100 years. This halacha is not good in Florida. But there are all the people.
All right.
What did he say, this halacha what?
He says it doesn't apply in Florida, Sal says. He says one dies, the other one dies, like that. All right, so, I think that's it for today. All right, let me end the recording.